From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Verlot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and welcome to Worldviews. For nearly four decades, Kate Bickham has managed nonprofit organizations and served on boards throughout Oklahoma City. Today, we'll talk about her work with the International Visitors Council. The group brings current and future world leaders to the United States for short-term visits.
In Washington, they're totally in appointments with different agencies. When they come here, they went to all the events, the concerts, they went riding on the river. They just loved Oklahoma City.
But first, Joshua Landis joins me to discuss the latest developments in Syria.
Everything has fallen apart, and Syria and Russia are bombing Aleppo again, and we're back to the beginning.
The news is next. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlott. Joshua Landis, welcome back to the studio. We haven't had a Syria update in a while, and of course, big news in Syria. We'd had the ceasefire. There had been a brokered ceasefire. Americans and Russians came together and tried to broker a ceasefire. Lasted about a week or so. This week, of course, some of the heaviest bombing in Aleppo that they've seen in months. Aid convoys. I mean, the whole point of the ceasefire was to allow aid into the area, humanitarian aid into the area. But even an aid convoy was bombed. So what is at the root of all this? I mean, explain the ceasefire, why it was kind of doomed to fail, maybe, and where we're expected to go from here.
Well, the backdrop to this is that Assad and the Russians have been winning in Syria. They have besieged East Aleppo, a major city in the north of Syria, the northern capital, which had been split in two, rebel half, government half. The government had finally succeeded in besieging and surrounding the rebel half in order to strangle it, starve it, and bomb it, to take it back. There was intense pressure on the United States and Kerry to do something to stop this forward momentum of the Assad regime and to stop the horrible human rights, you know, the tragedy that was happening and was going to happen and it is unfolding now in the eastern half of Aleppo. And so he came up with a ceasefire idea, which is let's stop the Russian and Syrian Air Force from flying over the city. What could he do in order to get that kind of leverage? Obama does not want to go to war against Russia for Syria. So he had to offer something to Russia. And what he offered them is if you stop and do this for a week, the ceasefire holds, we will coordinate our generals and our Defense Department will coordinate with yours to share intelligence and to bomb al-Qaeda in Syria. Now, al-Qaeda in Syria, it's called Nusra, is ensconced with the Syrian opposition troops. There are hundreds of militias, and al-Qaeda is one of the very strongest and best organized, and they are in the same trenches with the other militias that America is supporting. So Russia felt if we can get America to bomb this crucial militia, it'll completely wound the rebels, it'll undermine America's popularity in Syria, and it'll be a help to us in the long run. America signed on to it because I don't think they thought the ceasefire was going to hold, but they wanted to get something and show that they're doing something without going to war. And that's a tall order. Once the ceasefire was imposed, the rebels all condemned it. There was lots of firing going on. Then America mistakenly bombed a Syrian position in the middle of Deir ez-Zor, the most important eastern capital in the center of ISIS territory that had been holding on by a thread for 3 years with soldiers that all the Syrian government loyalists consider heroes because they've held fast in the middle of this ocean of ISIS people for 3 years. And none of them have been changed out. They've the same guys who've just been sitting in there. At any rate, over 60 were killed, 100 wounded. It almost fell. The city was almost captured. And anyway, all of Syria went – this government supported Syria – went wild. And they thought America had done this intentionally. And it shows the terrible lack of faith and understanding and distrust on all sides. Then several days later, Russia bombed the UN convoy. 36 trucks. 20 of them were destroyed, over 20 people killed. These are UN employees from the Red Crescent organization in Syria. You know, a catastrophe. So, you know, did Russia do it intentionally in order to get revenge? Anyway, everything has fallen apart. And Syria and Russia are bombing Aleppo again. And we're back to the beginning.
So, of course, the Russians deny that they had anything to do with this bombing. I mean, that's the other thing is like who's doing what? Nobody can even tell. But it just seems like, I mean, you know, weeks ago, the Russians indicated that they were done. They were basically, you know, leaving Syria. The United States has obviously been hesitant to get in. But it appears that the United States and Russia and others, Turkey obviously has engaged across the border, are becoming more and more engaged in Syria and bombing these territories. And the coordination, if there is any, isn't evident. So, you know, this particular conflict just seems to be deepening and obviously it's spread, but deepening and there's no resolution, no end in sight.
There's no resolution for the Syrians, but also it has significance for the U.S.-Russian relationship. And Kerry articulated a few days ago, he said, we are not enemies with Russia. We have conflicts with Russia and Ukraine and Eastern Europe, but we can cooperate with them in Syria. It's a complex relationship. And this is when he was hopeful for the ceasefire. And I think that Obama and Kerry don't want to go back to the Cold War profile of Russia as enemy. They don't want to leave that legacy to Hillary Clinton, who has positioned herself much more as a liberal hawk. And so in a sense, the collapse of the ceasefire is given a real – there's tons of pressure in Congress and elsewhere by people who want the United States to take a much more aggressive role against Russia to say, look, your attempt to be nice with Putin has failed. This was clearly a stupid thing to do in the first place, and we have to go to war against Russia. You know, not go to war, but we have to really escalate and escalate in places like Syria and so forth. And Obama does not want to do that. He's spoken in his interviews of trying to get away from what he sees is an ossified Cold War playbook. And he's done that in Cuba and Iran and other places trying to undo this Cold War architecture. But here it is snapping back. It's very hard to get out.
Well, and obviously in a few months, there's a presidential election. And so how that's going to affect all of this will be something we'll return to. So, Joshua, thank you for the update. We're giving this important information. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this conversation or answer any questions you might have. You can like us, follow us, and get in touch with us on social media at Worldviews KGOU. And you can get in touch with me at Suzette Gorlot. You can also follow Joshua on social media at Joshua_Landis, where you'll find a link to his widely read blog, Syria Comment. After a short break, I'll talk with Kay Bickham from the International Visitors Council of Oklahoma City. I'm Suzette Gorlot, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlot. Today I'm joined by Kay Bickham. She's probably best known as a former city councilwoman from Edmond, but she spent the majority of her career working in nonprofit management. She's now the executive director of Freedom of Information Oklahoma, but until 2010, she led the Oklahoma City International Visitors Council, which works to engage international leaders U.S. embassies invite to the country for short-term visits. Kay Bickham, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you.
And it's great to have you here at KGOU. I think this is long overdue, having a conversation about international activities that are going on in Oklahoma City, and you're heavily involved in that. So thank you for being here. I want to talk a little bit about the work that you're doing with the International Visitors Council as you lead that organization and have for quite some time. Can you give us a little bit of history about the International Visitors Council in Oklahoma City? I know it has a long history. It has some attachment to different organizations like the U.S. Information Agency, agency, the State Department. So some people aren't really aware that we're actually doing these sorts of things in our major cities around the world. So so tell us a little bit about what's going on in Oklahoma City in terms of international visitors coming to town and why.
Okay. Let me go back a few years when this program started actually with the FAA. The Federal Aviation Administration, an aeronautical center here in Oklahoma City, they brought in students from all over the world. And they were here for maybe 2 months. They would stay in apartments. They would go to class, and they would go home. And they approached the Oklahoma City Chamber of Commerce and said, we need you to be involved with these students. And so there was a friendship program started. And that kind of predates the International Visitors Council, where they stayed in the apartments, but there were families in the Oklahoma City area that would connect with these students. And so this still goes on somewhat till today. We don't get called on that much. So then when the National Council of International Visitors was formed, and I think this was back in the 50s, and it is kind of a liaison between the State Department, and at one time they were under the USIA, and the local communities. And they that now is called Global Ties. It's in Washington, D.C. There are these visitors come from around the world. They're nominated by our embassies, and it's kind of grassroots democracy. Our ambassadors in the embassies know more about this program than local people do, actually, because you can't volunteer to be in the program. Our embassies notice up-and-coming leaders in their various countries, and they nominate them for certain programs. They're in the United States for about 3 weeks. They spend a week in Washington, D.C., and then they come to cities all over the United States. There are 94 cities that are host cities for some of these visitors. And Oklahoma City is considered one of the smaller cities. And they call me, and they'll say, we have such and such a program. Can you handle this? And then we make the appointments for the individuals while they're here. And we're all volunteer, so it's kind of a real grassroots democracy-type program. The latest one we had was an aviation program. And they were at the FAA for most of their programming. And they were here for 5 days. They had already been in Washington for a week. And then from here, they go to various other cities before they go back home.
So these short-term visitors that come, you're just trying to connect them to people that they will know and develop maybe mentoring relationships with. The purpose of their involvement, and what kind of people are coming? What kind of areas and industries are they working in?
You know, you just name it. It's all different kinds. And these people are already established in their professions. They're not students. Indira Gandhi had been on one of these many years ago. Margaret Thatcher had been on one. Most of the up-and-coming of the leaders in the existing communities today have come through this program. And the purpose, well, there's lots of purposes, but one of the things is for them to get to know real Americans.
Okay.
And in Washington, they're totally in appointments with different agencies. When they come here, we connect them with their counterparts, and usually they have a certain... Like the ones that were just here was air traffic safety. But not only did they went to the Metro Tech Aviation, they went to FAA, and then they stay in a hotel, but they have home hospitality so that they really get to know. So they were downtown Oklahoma City. They went to all the events, the concerts. They went riding on the river. They just loved Oklahoma City. And most of them do when they come here because Oklahoma City is a very welcoming place.
Yeah.
And so we hear good reports from those.
That's Kay Bickham, and we're discussing her work with the Oklahoma City International Visitors Council. More of our conversation after a break. I'm Suzette Gorelott, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorelott, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. I've been talking with Kay Bickham. She's a nonprofit manager who works with a lot of different groups in Oklahoma City. But today, we've been talking about her work with the International Visitors Council. The organization partners with the Center of International Exchange's Global Ties program to bring international leaders in politics, media, education, and other fields to the United States. So you have host families that volunteer their time, people like you and others and me years ago, that volunteer their time to bring these people into their homes and take them out and about a town and
exactly.
just engage with them. So that notion is that they have a professional connection here, but they also have that personal connection that helps, you know, share information about and share a culture,
right.
American culture
right.
with others around the world.
Which is what they remember.
So speaking of that, what kind of follow-up is there? Have you seen a history? I mean, you mentioned this as being kind of a grassroots democracy movement in the sense that you're, you know, engaged with people from around the world that are just, you know, maybe up-and-coming leaders or people in their early days of professional lives, whatever it may be. But do you do any follow-up? Do you notice that people stay in touch with their visitors and kind of see how they develop over the years?
You know, just on a personal basis here, we don't follow up professionally or anything, but Global Ties does in Washington. They have started alumni networks in countries all over the world. And some of these people are brought back to our national meetings, which are held in February of every year. And they talk about what they have established in their country as a result from what they learned.
So, Kate, I'm really interested in kind of how you got involved in this. Tell us a little bit about your history and your interest in international things and how you go about promoting this and maybe how others might get involved. Mm-hmm.
I got involved in international when my son went as an exchange student to Australia, and that he will be 54 this year. So that was when he was a junior in high school. And then I got involved with a local exchange student program where I found homes for students and this type of thing. And there was a great woman that was my mentor by the name of Lois Crooks, who just passed away this year. And she was part of this International Visitors Council, which, you know, came down from the Global Ties and all that. She had gathered together all the different people that were involved in international student exchange, and just so that we would have a network to talk to each other. And then that kind of filled into this program that I'm in now. And we try to be an umbrella group with different kinds of international, any people that are interested in international. We have a meeting once a month, and we have a speaker that's on something international. It's a non-membership group, no fees to come. Everybody is invited to come. We have probably, from 12 to 20 people that come to our meetings. I have an email list of probably 150 people, just people that are interested in what's going on internationally in Oklahoma City. We connect with Open World, which is another group that's funded by the Library of Congress. That brings visitors in and professionals into Oklahoma City. We do that work some. We're connected with Friendship Force. We have representatives on our group that are part of Sister Cities. Just any type of international interest. The original program that I'm talking about is funded through the State Department, and it's through the Education and Cultural part of the State Department. And that's where the internationals that come are paid for entirely by our taxpayer dollars, but all that money goes back into our economy because that's what pays for their hotels and various things like that. So they are, you know, it comes into our local economy.
I think that's an interesting point when we talk about some of the benefits of this. Clearly, there are benefits to those international visitors who are coming and connecting with professionals and friends in the community. But these are, as you mentioned, kind of economic arrangements as well, in the sense that these are State Department funds that come and support local communities to engage with these visitors. But can you talk a little bit more about some of the personal benefits that you've received from this? I know, you know, my experience in it and my experience in general of just hosting international visitors over the years is just the tremendous opportunity to learn more about other cultures, other peoples, to develop kind of more of an open mind about what's going on around the world. And so, I mean, have you noticed among your membership that kind of growth in personal excitement and rewards from this type of opportunity?
Well, you know, basically it just makes the world a smaller place. But to go to one of these meetings, everybody has a smile on their face. You just, when you talk about meeting internationals and knowing what's going on around the world, it's just a wonderful opportunity.
Heartwarming.
And when I bring some of these people to my house for dinner and just for an evening, and I just feel like I like to do it all the time. I particularly like the multi-regional groups. because that'll be one person from each region of the world. And to just see the interaction that they have with each other, and then to learn about how different, you know, things that we consider ordinary are happening in different other parts of the world, it's very stimulating.
I mean, it's interesting to think that this is a little hub of international relations right here in Oklahoma, where, like you mentioned, people from different parts of the world that come together, and you have Americans and people from different regions that are all interacting, a little mini UN going on, if you will, that breeds a lot of goodwill and shares American way of life and culture. You know, people say so often, and I was just actually talking to a member of my board yesterday about sending some Chinese scholars here to the United States, but he wanted to make sure that they came to Oklahoma because they're going to New York, they're going to Washington, they're going to the usual places. But coming to Oklahoma, they see the real America, he said. You know, there are presidents that are famous for saying this in the past, that this is where you find, you know, real Americans, and they love it. They get outside of those really more international communities, if you will, on the East Coast or on the West Coast, and come to a place that is international, but is also very, very American, and that's really important for them to see and in order to understand the United States. Have you had the opportunity to go and follow up with some of your visitors and travel to their parts of the world and see them in their home countries?
You know, I actually have. My very first host was for a Bobby from London, a policeman from London, and he actually was a guard at the American Embassy there. And I traveled to London several years later and had dinner in his home, so that was neat. I also had a parliamentarian from Denmark who was a woman from Greenland, because Greenland is part of the Danish government, and we met her over there, and she took us on tours. And so we have followed up with this, you know, with some of them, and some of them have returned.
All right. Well, Kay, thank you so much for being here today and sharing this information. I think it's important for us to remember that we do have a role to play in international relations, even though we're just daily citizens living our lives here in the Oklahoma arena, that foreign policy and international affairs are a part of our life, and it isn't just left up to those in Washington and elsewhere to engage with the rest of the world. So I appreciate you sharing this information and your experience. So thank you very much for being here. You've been listening to my conversation with Kay Bickham from Oklahoma City's International Visitors Council. We have links to the organization's website online at kgou.org. Worldviews is a collaborative partnership between KGOU and the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Audra Bruhls prepares our digital content for the web, and Brian Hardzinski edits our interviews. Sam Dupre puts the show together, and Katie Holland prepared the research for this interview. For Joshua Landis, I'm Suzette Corlett.